Welcome to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show in association with Newsarama. This is John Suntress. Today, we speak with writer Steve Niles about his creations and collaborations with some of the masters of horror. This episode of Word Balloon is sponsored by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades offers a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at up to 35% off with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. Plus, check out Steve Niles' 30 Days of Night books from IDW. And don't forget to visit InStock Trades' sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, at dcbservice.com for all your pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off, and monthly specials are 45 to 75% off every month. March pre-orders include the first issue of DC's new Countdown weekly series for 75% off. Only 74 cents for Countdown number 51. Visit InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com. Steve Niles made his mark in comics when he formed his own publishing company called Arcane Comics, where he published, edited, and adapted several comics and anthologies for Eclipse. His adaptations have included works by Clive Barker, Richard Matheson, and Harlan Ellison. IDW released a hardcover and softcover collection of Niles' adaptation of Richard Matheson's I Am Legend. Niles is best known for his horror noir character Cal McDonald, the star of many miniseries and prose projects. His original vampire tale, 30 Days of Night, will soon be released as a major motion picture. He's also working with comics legend Bernie Wrightson on City of Others and on several other projects that come up in the course of our conversation.
I'm curious, growing up, which horror comics you read, if any.
Actually, Creepy and Eerie, and, you know, when I couldn't get those, I was really just reading Marvel superhero stuff, and I would read the Marvel Monsters, but comic book-wise, I wasn't, you know, I didn't get a lot of horror, you know, other than the magazines. It was mostly, you know, films and novels and things like that.
Sure. It seemed like Creepy and Eerie, though, the Warren publications were the best ones and went the goriest and also had the most interesting art, too.
Believe me, they frightened the hell out of my mom, you know, because I would bring those things to church and stuff. And, you know, so I just carry them around all day. And every once in a while she'd glance down and see what I was reading. And, you know, she was mortified, but, you know, she understands now.
Vampirella obviously probably played off really well in church.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love that. Actually, I had every single one of those.
Did
every
you really?
Every single Vampirella, every single Creepy, every single Eerie. Wound up trading a lot of them, you know, as years went on. Actually, with Ashley Wood, I traded Creepies and Eeries because I had so many.
I'd like to talk about 30 Days of Night. And it's such a great idea, and it's such a simple concept. What made you think vampires in Alaska when there's 6 months of darkness?
I mean, you know, every year they run, you know, you can find the same little human interest story, you know, they run, like, today's the day the lights go out in Barrow, Alaska. And what drew me into it actually was, you know, I mean, the darkness, obviously, you know, immediately I thought of vampires, but what really got me was the fact that, you know, alcohol wasn't illegal, you could bring it in, but they were really, you know, the suicide rate is so high, and I was like, God, that's what drew me into the location. I was like, you know, what kind of people live there, and then slowly, you know, and then, like I said, the vampire idea was sort of the obvious one. And I'm still, you know, I've heard rumors that there, you know, somebody must have done vampires in the Arctic Circle. I'm sure there's some, like, you know, some
paperback
writer in Finland who just hates me, you know. But yeah, it was just this, you know, just this thing I came up with. I mean, I pitched it for years and to Blank Faces. You know, I was as surprised as anybody when it took off.
Have people from Barrow, have you had contact with people who live in Barrow?
I have. I've been contacted by a lot of people up there. They've been really sweet. And, you know,
that's cool.
Would like me to come up and visit. And, you know, because, I mean, I did the best research I could, but obviously without going there, you know, I made some mistakes, and I think they found it pretty funny. You know, like that Ben and I put trees, you know, there. They're like, we haven't seen a tree in, you know, 30, like within 50 miles of this place. You know, because nothing, it's just frozen up there all the time. So I was like, yeah, I guess I never thought of that. But yeah, they've been really, you know, they've been really great. I get, every once in a while, I'll get new mail from somebody just asking me about it. Very cool.
How are things going with the movie?
It's finished, and David Slade is editing right now. So mostly what I've seen at this point are, you know, stills that were taken on the set, production stills, everything looks amazing. Everything I've seen just looks fantastic.
Did they stay in contact with you as far as getting advice from you, or was it pretty much, you know, they got the option, they, you know, it's their movie?
No, I wrote the first draft, so, you know, I'm one of the writers on it. I'm not a producer, but, you know, everybody from Sam Raimi to Mike Richardson to Rob Tappert, and then finally the director, you know, David Slade, all stayed in contact with me out of respect for the material. They were very, very cool about it. So I've had constant updates, you know, and had I had any time, I could have went and hung out on the set, but, you know, I just couldn't afford to take 2-3 weeks off to go to New Zealand. But, no, they've just been fantastic. Mike Richardson is an old friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he made Time Cop with Sam Raimi and have been wanting to do stuff with him ever since. And he's the one who got the comic into Raimi's hands because Sony or Columbia had already passed on it, you know, and then he got it to Raimi, and Raimi read it and just went nuts. And, you know, and that's sort of, I guess, when, you know, the avalanche started. You know, it was just like from, you know, it's pretty fuzzy from that point on.
Well, it seems like the films that Mike has had a hand in are the better ones, I think, that are making it to film. I mean, Hellboy's a perfect example of that I think really turned out wonderfully for a property that didn't have that brand name recognition of a Superman or a Spider-Man or the X-Men.
And it was called Hellboy. That's the reason I still was. I'm just stunned. You know, I thought it was just, you know.
Big Southern backlash, yeah.
Yeah, you know. I thought the red states would, we'll hang them for sure. But, no, you know, and I think, you know, Mike, and that's where, you know, Mike and Raimi sort of have this thing that is just, and I think it's the key to the success of the Dark Horse films. They're true to the material.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Spider-Man is true to the material. Hellboy is true to the material. Sin City, you know.
Absolutely.
It practically was the material,
yeah.
You know. I mean, it's unbelievable, and that's the key, you know. Not to pick on any one of the movies, but you go tampering with what makes the stuff good, and it will fail every time. And, you know, and Fantastic Four, you know,
yeah.
Is evidence of that. You know, I think if they would have just told the real origin, because it has so much charm to it, you know, and the real reason why Dr. Doom hates them, you know, it would have worked.
Certainly.
It would have worked beautifully. I'm sure there were people who argued with Raimi saying, no, you can't have that stupid wrestling scene in there, you know. And he must have been like, what, are you kidding? That's like the biggest part of the Spider-Man's origin,
you bet.
Know. And but there it is, you know, and I think in the end that just makes for the best movie, though.
Working with guys like Sam Raimi and you being a horror film fan, that had to be, you know, wonderful.
That it was incredible. I remember, you know, when I sold the movie, everybody was running around, you know, my agents and people, you know, especially anybody here in L.A., just going, oh, my God, the director of Spider-Man is producing your movie. And I was sitting there going like, what? The director of Evil Dead is producing my movie, you know?
Absolutely.
I'm like, that's what made me happy. I mean, I love Spider-Man, but to me, Raimi is also, you know, the king of independent, you know, horror films. He loved Evil Dead so much, he did it twice, you know?
Yeah. Compare the cultures of the horror fans and the comic book fans. I know there are some similarities, but I just saw Tim Seeley last night, and we were talking about a horror convention in Chicago that was going on at the same time as the New York Comic Convention. And he even says he thinks it's a different head.
Completely different.
Yeah.
Completely
and
different. The horror community is sort of, there seems to be two sides to it. There's the literary side. You know, those are the people, Stephen King, you know, Clive Barker, Dean Koontz fans, you know. And then what the majority of it seems to be really is film fandom. You know, they're horror movie fans.
Because
I know when I go set up at the, we learned, actually me and IDW learned it the hard way. You know, we went and set up at one of the Fangoria conventions. And, you know, at the time we had 30 Days a Night, all the different editions, and even, you know, even the movie announced, the only comic we sold the whole time we were there was the Dawn of the Dead adaptation. The one that was directly linked to a movie in existence. So I think the horror, you know, for the most part, you know, the gas that keeps the horror fandom engine going is film. And just that in itself just makes it very, very different. I mean, that's the one thing about comics. You got to give them. They're readers. you know?
Mm-hmm.
Even if they're using pictures, you know, and that's the, you know, that, there's a real big difference there. I would say, you know, just comic people are a lot more introverted, and the horror people, you know, a lot more extroverted, you know? They really just love big personalities and stuff, so. But it is, it's very different, and it's fun to sort of straddle the two of them.
So are you still semi-anonymous at these horror conventions?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have to introduce myself with credentials, you know? You know, even though, I mean, I've been associated with, like, you know, some, you know, Richard Matheson and Clive Barker.
Yes.
You know, guys like that for a long time, you know, people don't really know the work. It's changing a little bit, though. You know, 30 days, obviously, is really changing that a lot.
You mentioned Richard Matheson. I Am Legend was such a cool production. I'm glad that Deluxe Edition came out.
Yeah, me too. You know, that is really great. I mean, that whole thing, because that was one of the first things I ever got, you know. I had met Clyde Barker. I mean, it was like all at once, when I was about 19, I decided I was going to make comic books, and I started pestering the hell out of everybody and met Clyde Barker, you know, and worked up the courage to write Richard Matheson, like, a handwritten letter, and just basically saying, like, you know, all the, you know, I Am Legend basically was the book that got me to read, you know, as a kid.
Sure.
Because I had, like, no interest, you know. They were like, come on, read Huckleberry Finn. I'm like, no. Had no interest in it, you know. And I Am Legend, I just devoured. And as soon as I was like, oh, they make books like this? You know, I like this. And so I wrote him a letter and, you know, said, you know, who I was living in my sister's basement and, you know, but I'm trying to get a company going, and got a letter back from him personally. Like, my stomach, you know, my heart sort of sank at first, because he opened it with, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to ask for a fee of $100 for the rights to I Am Legend.
Cool.
I was like, oh, my God. You know, I was like, that was the most amazing thing. You know, I couldn't believe how generous he was being.
Absolutely.
You know, and it was, the sad fact was, though, I still had to borrow the money. I was so broke, you know. But, you know, I got the rights. I wound up, by that time, you know, teaming up with Eclipse and getting a guy that I found scribbling. That's his first comic, Elman Brown. You know, that was the first time he ever did anything like that. I saw him doodling on a napkin in a restaurant and asked him if he wanted to help me on this project. And we did it through Eclipse. And, you know, and then all these years later, Ted Adams from IDW called me and was like, well, you know, we'd really like to put that out. And I was like, well, you know, I don't know where the artist is. I don't know where the art is. All the Eclipse film, you know, kind of famously was destroyed in floods. You know, which is why it is, you know, the Miracle Man books aren't reprinted and all that stuff. And they found him in, like, Pennsylvania. He had every single original page except one.
Wow.
And IDW bought them, gave me the entire book as a gift, the original art, after I hadn't seen it for a decade or, you know, more than a decade.
Sure.
And put out that amazing edition. And I couldn't be happier. So, I mean, what were the chances of 224 pages of comic art still being in one piece?
Yeah, really?
I know. So we really lucked out on that one. And my favorite book, and Mr. Matheson, I met him recently, and he told me he really enjoyed it, and, you know, said it did a great job. And so that's probably one of my, you know, happier moments, prouder moments of my life.
You have worked with so many different artists. How often now are you able to really mold a project around the right artist? Or, you know, do you have a style in mind when you're writing and then are looking for that artist that fits that style?
You know, most of the time I know who the artist is going to be, you know, and I try to establish a sort of, you know, I sort of get a dialogue going with that artist. And that's a big part of what, you know, like, that's the whole thing with, like, everybody's always asked me why I don't, like, print a script book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I know, you know, Bendis and guys like that, they like to, you know, they put out the books with their scripts. I'm like, mine are, you know, I mean, even though they're the same format and the same kind of general thing, but mine are personal conversations with the artist, you know, where you're directing and you're giving them inspiration and trying to get them moving. It's not just the sort of flat thing. So I, you know, and there's a lot of cursing, you know, even in the, like, even in the cat, you know, even just in the description, you know, of like, you know, cause I'm talking to friends, you know.
Sure.
And just try to get them excited and go, this is going to be, you know, we want this one to be really bloody. And let's get, get the excitement up. So I guess I do tailor, you know, I do try to tailor stuff to it.
Well, I've been reading about your work with Tim Bradstreet on the covers for the Cal McDonald stuff, and it's interesting that you're a participant in a lot of those cover shoots.
I know. If I wasn't holding the lights, you know, I was. I stood in as a creature once in a while.
Hand in issue 3?
That's my head and hand. I actually that little tiny mask. I pulled over my head for Tim. It was almost killing me. That was like a corpse mask from, God, I don't know, maybe, we got it from KMB, so, you know, for all I know, it was in Land of the Dead.
Okay.
You know, and it was this tiny little mask. I just pulled it over and just made it look like I had this tiny little bald head. And then those hands, and put the hands on and stuff. And then we actually had the Nova up on, at the, because I own the 73 Nova Supersport, the Cal Drive. So
wow.
We brought it to my shop. And they let us, you know, put it up on the hydraulics so that, you know, Tim could get all these angles, you know, that he wanted, you know. And you know, me and Tom were just in there, like, you know, rolling around, wrestling with each other, you know, while he took pictures. So I just love, you know, working with Tim is just, I've known him since he worked at Eclipse. And it's taken a long time for us to actually get to do some work together, and I am just enjoying the hell out of it. I think those covers are just fantastic. Come true for me.
You guys are coming, it seems, from the same frame of mind, because with Cal McDonald, you're doing this hard-boiled horror.
Oh, exactly.
And that's somewhere that Tim was certainly very comfortable with the Hellblazer series and a lot of his own ideas as well. And it's great to see, you know, like-minded creators getting together and putting together something cool.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly the case with Tim, and that's certainly the case, you know, with me now working with Bernie Wrightson.
Yes.
You know, to me, you know, that was such a weird thing because, yeah, to me, it's like, yeah, that's a dream come true because I've loved Wrightson since I was a little kid. You know, but to have him realize the same thing and realize, you know, that, you know, me and you know, that he and I should work together, just amazing.
Did you approach him? This is for City of Others.
I didn't say a word. I was so happy to just know him as a friend. And if you hang around him, it's like hanging around Tim or any really unbelievably talented artist, they get hit up constantly for work, and I just decided on meeting him, I was like, you know, we were coming from such a similar place as our love of horror and what, you know, what we love and why we love it. I just made like a very conscious decision. I'm not going to hit him up for work. I'm not going to be one of these, you know, I'm not going to be another person who hits him up. And then we go out and we go to this place called the Concrete Beach where you can get oysters and beer, and we're hanging out, and we started like writing this just verbally jamming on in this hard-boiled detective story. So I went home and wrote up some of the text and sent it to him, and he really liked it. And a few weeks later, he sat me down and he literally did this, like, he's like, listen, I think I want to do comics again, and I want to do them with you. And I'm pretty sure my heart stopped. I was just like, what, who, wait, you know, did you just say what I think you just said? And then, you know, we initially set it up at DC, and they wound up, I think, honestly, once they really saw what we were talking about, because we really wanted no holds barred.
Yeah.
you know, they were like, maybe, obviously I love DC and I'm doing a lot of other stuff with them,
yes.
So there's no problem. So we wound up going to Dark Horse with it, and me and Bernie just started jamming on ideas, and it just came together. And it is an absolute pleasure working with him, you know. It's literally like sharing a brain with a person.
That's fantastic. Beyond this arc, do you see yourself working more with him?
We could keep going for, I mean, at this point, we have about 2 years planned out.
That's
fantastic. Literally go for, I mean, it's up to the fans at this point. It's up to the fans and the publishers, you know, and the publisher, you know.
And there's a lot of zombie material out there right now. Does that you know, do you sometimes go, Jesus, I mean, you know.
Nah.
I mean, it's good, and it's good stuff, too.
I just did a thing, you know, called, like, Pieces for Mom. And
yes, I want to ask
you
about that, which was outstanding.
Oh, thanks. You know, and it's just like, when there's a story, there's a story. I mean, you know, it's very funny to me because people always do this to, you know, they'll always say this. They'll always go like, wow, don't you find yourself, you know, a lot of zombie comics out there. It seems like everybody's doing horror now. And I'm like, you been to a comic store? Because all I'm seeing is a bunch of people in tights. You know, I'm still, you know, like there's a very small percentage of comics that aren't superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yet it's like, you know, people are worried that there's four zombie comics out there, you know, or like, you know, it's going to be too much. Like, you know, it's just another, it's like the Monster Hunter. It's just now that's a, you know, it's another type of character that we can utilize. There's as many different kinds of zombie stories as there are superhero stories.
Well, and Monster Hunters, back to Cal McDonald.
Oh, yeah, and Monster Hunters. I mean, now, you know, everybody from Cal McDonald to Blade to Buffy, you know, right, to,
sure.
You know, Kolchak, you know,
yes,
all the way back
backslash,
to Van Helsing.
Yes. Well, back to Cal, you know, you've got Tom Jane as your, as Tim's got him as his physical model for Cal.
Well, that's how we met. Me and Tom and I met because he was touring doing the Punisher, you know, promoting the Punisher, and he came up to me and was like, you know, I like Cal. I want to be Cal. I am Cal.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You know, and we became like immediate friends. But we met because he wanted to know if they're, you know, basically, are you making a Cal McDonald movie? So, you know, this is our chance to sort of, you know, do it. You know,
good.
You know, and hopefully one day we'll get a movie made.
That's cool. I've loved the prose collections, the short story collections as well of Cal.
Those are my favorite. You know, the two novels and the short story collection. That's my favorite stuff. You know, if I could pay the rent just writing, you know, Cal prose, that's what I'd do. Actually, Dark Horse will be re-releasing all three of the books in one big volume.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, probably sometime about, you know, next year sometime.
Very cool. I look forward to the Supernatural Freak machine coming out in April.
You know, the scripts are all finished, and I think Kelly's got about half or more of the pages done already of the 44 additional pages for the trade.
Okay.
You like how I make it sound like people, you know, they're getting free pages? But, you know, just so people know, the story behind that was, you know, we got three issues of that out, and the series stalled. And it hung in limbo for a long time till I got Cal set up back at Dark Horse.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've had to back up and finish a comic series that we started years ago. So it was pretty interesting, pretty fun to do. So, but that's it. Now Dark Horse is putting out the whole thing as we're going straight to a graphic novel.
Very cool.
So it'll have the first three issues, which everybody's seen, plus the 44, you know, the two issues they have it, and I keep saying it like it's bonus 44 pages, but it's actually, you know,
the end of the story.
What was supposed to come out before.
Well, forgive me, that's, you know, honestly, that is one of the reasons why I went to trades with Cal, because, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, books get late or whatever, I mean, even Criminal Cop back in the day, and they're great, they're wonderful stories, but, you know, you just, it's so funny, it seems like, and back to Bradstreet with his connection, with Cal and the Punisher, that's the kind of stuff I do like to wait for trade and really just read that whole story in one sitting and everything and really enjoy it that way.
Yeah, and the way I write, or I try to write, is I'm probably a little too aware of the final. I'm not always thinking, you know, how will this read on the newsstand? I'm thinking, how is this going to read when it's all collected? Because in the end, that's what it's going to be.
Sure.
So I try not to do too many, you know, stop starts. I like cliffhangers, but I'm always like, boy, you don't want a cliffhanger in the middle of, like, the second act, you know.
Right.
So it's like, try to, you know, put stuff in the right place. And I'm always very, very aware of that, even, you know, like with working with Bernie. You know, that's one of the things with City of Others. I really want, like, this first arc is how it's going to be collected, is, you know, how I'm thinking about it.
What about when you work on mainstream stuff like the Batman stuff or the Creeper?
Oh, that's, you know, with Gotham County Line, it was a little bit different because I had those three big books to do,
mm-hmm.
You know, so that made it a lot, that was really fun. But with the Creeper, you know, I did. I tried to go be a little more mainstream as far as making sure that there would always be a cliffhanger, that it always ended on some sort of, you know, great note, and then you sort of rev up again.
Mm-hmm.
But I still try to, you know, again, be aware of how it will be, you know, how it'll be when it's collected. Because once again, you know, the, you know, I just think single issues are just going to be harder and harder to find, and, you know, trades are going to be what people are reading.
Did you ever write really short 22-page or less comic stories?
Oh, yeah. I've had a couple, like the horror, there was a thing I did called Horror Side, was a collection of just weird little, like, Twilight Zone kind of stories. You know, I did that. What I got to do recently that was really cool and I'm really excited about is, you know, this 28 Weeks Later thing?
Mm-hmm.
That we are going straight to trade. There, it is coming out as an 88-page original graphic novel. I am so psyched about it. When they told me they wanted to do that, I'm like, wait, you don't want to put out the four issues first? And they're like, no. They're like, you do it in chapters. And the whole thing, so people are going to be able to, I guess, $15.99, $17.99, and you get 88 pages.
That's cool.
Of new comics. So I'm really curious to see how that's going to go, because that is was really fun to do.
That was such a great movie, and really, I think, you know, kind of came at the right time, and it had the right sensibility and tone that I think it even sucked in more than the average horror audience to really...
I think so, too.
Yeah, you know, I mean, so...
That's what was really fun about doing this, because my assignment, I guess, you know, was to bridge the two movies, because they've got the sequel coming out 28 weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah, 28 weeks later. So they wanted me to bridge 28 days with 28 weeks, but not just, like, you know, shove a puzzle piece in between them. Just sort of more like, you know, merging a zipper, you know, that type of thing. So I actually get to go into, did that make any sense at all? Did anybody
yeah.
know what I was talking about when I said that? I start, actually, the first scene goes back into the lab before 28 days later.
Okay.
Because when I first saw that, I was like, okay, you've infected monkeys with rage. A lot happened to get to this point, you know. Like, what got, one, how do you inject rage? How did that? What was the genesis of that? And what was, you know, and how did they come to be injecting these apes and giving them the and showing them these images and, you know, I mean, giving them this infection and then sitting them in front of these TV screens and showing them some of the, you know, the worst violence they could find. You know, it was like, so I got to figure out how they got to that point. You know, and then sort of then the timeline takes us from that point through the whole first movie, past it, and into the second, and then leaves us at the basically the doorstep of the new movie.
Building on that, is the science of horror as interesting as the legend, you know, component that, that horror might have? Because it sounds like that's the direction you're going in with something like this.
I think it does. You know, I mean, that's a lot of what I've been doing with vampires anyway. And, you know, in, like, Criminal Macabre,
mm-hmm.
that was sort of what, like, sort of deconstructing monsters a little bit, you know, in giving them an origin, giving, you know, in that it was like, you know, I came up with this thing that, you know, vampires and werewolves and all these things seem to kind of start at the same point in history, and they all seem to come out of Europe. And, you know, I know, even though I know that can be argued. You know, believe me, I'm not saying that's a fact, because all countries have, you know, these legends that can
sure.
go back even further, you know, thousands and thousands of years. But I just picked this thing that, you know, what we know today as the traditional werewolf and the vampire and the you know, the ghoul and these and all the various offshoots came from the Black Plague, came from a strain of the Black Plague. And when they first came to be, they were pure monsters who, you know, you needed crosses and silver bullets to beat. But as vampires went down the line, it became like a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox until now we have the modern vampire, which is what Cal dealt with, and you can just, you know, you can basically, if you just blow their heads off, you know, you can get them. You don't need the crosses. And so I really like that kind of stuff, you know. You know, sort of, you know, deconstructing a little bit. On the other hand, you know, and the same thing with in 30 Days a Night, it's werewolves, werewolf, vampires, all that. It's an, you know, it's an infection. It's a disease, you know, you get that, you know, just changes your entire physiology.
Mm-hmm.
So, can you hear my cat yowling?
No, barely, but it's okay.
Okay.
It kind of fits.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not hurting her.
I was going to say, as he's experimenting and making his own breed of monsters as we speak.
Yeah, no, she's just, she likes to climb up in closets, and if I don't let her, she yells.
Well, would do other parts of the world and their legends interest you as well, and are they areas you'd like
Absolutely.
To explore?
Absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, it's just, at this point, it's just a matter of time, because I've made that statement before about, you know, most of the things seem to come from, you know, the 1200s, you know, mm-hmm. Europe or whatever, and people be like, you know, obviously you need to read more Eastern, you know, science. Like, I know they're there, but, you know, let me have my fun, you know, because I'm just trying to do the, you know, sort of the traditional European monster. But, yeah, the other stuff really interests me. It's just like, I mean, it's unbelievable how much material there is out there.
Have the Virgin guys hit you up at all, or have they approached you?
I was just thinking about that. I met them in New York, and we're gonna talk.
That's cool.
And you know, that's, it's very funny because one of the angles I wanted to talk to them about was a more world, like an actual anthology or series that does explore horror outside the traditional Western, you know, motifs. And,
oh, that's
God.
Cool.
Not to rip off. I was like, I'm listening to myself talk. I was like, what's that, Woody Allen and Annie Hall? He's like, Christ, I sound like FM radio. I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, no.
I'm not helping with my radio voice, man. And
I know, but I did just say, like, motifs, didn't I?
It's all right.
Oh, okay.
I won't tell. Okay. It's just us, man. Nobody downloads the show.
Okay, good. Thank God.
No, that's great. And that's really interesting. And it's because, yeah, it's what do you do with horror? Do you... You know, there are plenty of people that make money just doing pastiches and recalling, yeah. You know, old tropes. But no, I just used trope.
Yeah,
so don't feel
thank
bad.
Thank you. I feel all much right? better now.
But that's the cool thing. No, you really do. I think, you know, you're bringing new ideas into horror. And also, it's that problem, and I don't know, it's kind of like when you ask a wrestler, you know, is it fake? But I'm going to ask you, forgive me, but
sure.
it's the difficulty of conveying horror in a static image, like, you know, a comic book.
No, you know, because you still have the same tools, you know? I mean, you still, you know, yeah, I mean, I know, it depends on what people think of horror, but for me, horror has always been something that creeps up on you later.
Okay.
You know, I know when you're watching a movie, everybody jumps when the cat jumps out of through the window, you know? It's like, oh, the big fake scare. Oh, you know, that's a guarantee. And if we could spring-load a comic with a chainsaw, yeah, we could get that scare. But the other everything else, which and what I grew up on with Poe and, you know, Lovecraft and reading Stephen King and Richard Matheson and Clive Barker, these guys, I would read their books, get a little freaked out when you're reading it, and then it's later on that it gets you. You know, it's like later on when you're trying to get the key in the front door and the bulb's out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're like, you know, and you realize, you know, it snuck up on you. You can do that in comics, you know, because it's all about, and, you know, it's definitely the same thing with a superhero book. You know, you want your big reveal on a page turn, you know, and you want your creep. I love to put the creep. You know, if say you're going to kill off a character, an important character, love to do it on a page turn because it just sinks a lot more. Art style wise, like that's why I love working with Ben Templesmith because I think his dark murkiness that I've heard people kind of complain about. Is what makes it, that's like a horror movie.
Yes.
You know, that like you're looking in the shadows and you can see there's a shape there, but you can't quite make it out. He gets that across in art, you know, and then he can just do this explosive violence, which I just think is amazing too. So I think there are different scares, and there is a few you have to live without, but I think horror is as viable a medium in comics as anything else. I mean, I can't think of any other genre, you know. If you can do science fiction, you can do horror, you can do superheroes, you can do horror.
And here's a left-field question. Would an audio horror drama appeal to you, and have you ever thought about doing anything like that?
You know, it really would. I'm sort of jealous of all my artist friends. Because all my artist friends get to listen to books on tape.
Okay.
While they work. I'm a writer, so if I listen to books on tape, I start typing what I'm listening to.
Right.
You know, I'm like, you know, I can't do it. I work with music or silence, but or people are, and I don't commute. because I work at home.
Right.
So I have like no way, but I so many people I know, Ted Adams, IDW, big books on tape guy, you know, manages to devour, you know, he basically doubles his reading, you know, because, you know, I'm, and the same thing with Bernie Wrightson, you know, he listens to books on tape while he works. So I would, yeah, I would be interested in it. It would be really, I think that could be very, very cool and fun. And the thing is, if you listen to the old radio shows.
That's what I was going to ask.
You know, I still remember hearing my.
How about Arch Hobler, the Lights Out guy?
Vincent Price reading Telltale Heart.
Oh, sure.
When I was in third grade. Scared the crap out of me. You know? And I didn't even understand what was going on, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really understand all the layers of what was going on in that story at that age, and it was scary. And I think you could do that now.
And they did those Hitchcock albums back then, too.
Yep. Oh, I remember the Hitchcock books, too.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. I don't know why they put those in school bookstores or in school libraries. But they were always there, and I would always be reading them going like, do they know these are here? I remember, because I think they just had bright colors. I mean, they had those, you know, the big hardcovers. I think they just bought them kind of sight unseen.
Well, and they had those kind of silly kind of humor, you know, covers, too.
Yeah,
in that Hitchcock
them,
way.
Like, I mean, there were some pretty hardcore stories in
there.
You know, and I mean, even as a kid, I was like, I felt like I was getting away with something.
Well, and I want to talk about Raw, but I mentioned horror and comedy, The Cryptics. How's that going?
We're working on issue 3 now.
Cool.
And we're also working along the lines of what you just said, even though we're not going full-blown with the audio. I'm working with a company called Big Dog Games in conjunction with Sony, and we're going to be doing The Cryptics as the first issue of the comic, as a downloadable comic for your PSP, fully animated with music and interactive balloons and special features, interviews, and behind the scenes of, you know, how the art is done and all that kind of stuff.
That's great. How are people going to, are they going to be able to buy it in game stores? Or?
No, see, that's the thing. We want to figure out the cheapest way, because I don't think people want to pay $14.99 for a comic book, which is about as cheap as you can put out a disc for.
Sure.
So they're going to be downloadable from the website, downloaded directly to your PSP to be stored on there. And that way we can do it for about the same price as a comic, hopefully a little cheaper. And if it works, we're going to do Pieces for Mom and, you know, The Cryptics, and we're going to see how the whole thing goes. And then maybe if people like it, we'll do Bad Planet and things like that.
Well, then, you know, and let's talk about Bad Planet, because there's something that, yeah, I everyone loved the first issue.
Yeah, well, next one's issue 2 is coming out in 2008.
Is it really?
Issue 3 will be 2010.
No, I know Lewis.
Scheduled. Don't worry.
I know Lewis got sick. Lewis LaRoe.
Yeah. No, we just, you know what? We're called restart.
Okay.
You know, that's basically, we just finally, we, it's one of those things where sort of our loyalty to the team sort of came and bit us in the ass. You know, we all just wanted to hang in there and see if we could, because we would love the way the first book came out.
Mm-hmm.
But Lewis just couldn't do it. So we finally just, you know, gave up, and by then, I seriously, like a year had passed, and Tim found a buddy of his, Jim Daly, brought him to us, and now we've got 5 issues in the can.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, like, Tim's inking, the pencils are all done, the scripts are all done, we're going to get it all finished, and then we're going to put it out. That's the lesson me and Tom learned. So we did that, and we have this thing called Alien Pig Farm 3000.
Yes, I wanted to ask about that as well.
Well, we're doing that one. The entire series, all 4 issues are finished.
Okay.
Before we've just now solicited for it. And they're all in the can, so we can just put them out one at a time. There won't be any late books.
Very cool.
So, yeah. Sorry about that with Bad Planet, but, you know, it's never happened to me before like this. But, you know, glad we got a good team of people now, and it seems, you know, going good.
Alien Pig Farm, it's Todd Farmer's writing it and Don Marquez doing the art.
Uh-huh. And, you know, and we all worked on developing the story and working on various things. It's very odd because it's like, you know, on that one, it's Tom and I are sort of, we're the producers. He had the idea, but it was just, you know, it was a paragraph. So we all sat down and we fleshed it out, and then Todd was like, okay, how do you write a comic book? You know, so I worked with Todd and you know, helped them script some stuff and tried to do it, you know, and just worked with them. And then, you know, Tom and I helped with, you know, each of the scripts and just sort of shepherded it and put it to working it into shape. And, you know, we went from there. And, you know, as far as Marquez, it's so funny. I own two Marquez paintings, maybe three drawings or so that I've got off him from eBay over the years.
Wow.
Because he always does these, like, great monster portraits. I'm watching one on eBay right now. And when we were started talking about this, me and Tom were like, God, you know, I wish we could find somebody who could do, like, that Frazetta EC time period, you know? And then we started looking at, you know, we were thinking about guys like Mike Hoffman, you know?
Sure.
And these guys. And then we're like, you know, Tom came to me and was like, have you ever heard of Don Marquez? I'm just like, you know, I turn around and point at a Frankenstein portrait on my wall. I'm like, me and him? And he called him and asked, and he was totally into it, and he nailed the style. And here we are. And it was so funny. He didn't even know that he had sold me all that art.
Oh, that's
because Tom told, you know, because I guess, if my eBay name is, you know, something, it's not my own. So he
sure.
had no clue. So it's funny the way things work out. And then we've got great covers by Mark Schultz and William Stout.
I've seen those, and they look fantastic, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's, again, there's Tom.
Tom is like, it's great that you hooked up with him, because it really seems like Tom's like this Forrest Gump, like, comic fan that can just call these guys up and like, hey, you want to do this?
Yeah, that's exactly it, you know, because he's fearless. You know, so I'll just be like, you know, it's just so funny, because I remember when he brought up some of these people for Bad Planning. He's like, I'm going to get Bernie Wrightson, Mike Kaluta, you know, Dave Stevens, you know. And I was just like, yeah, you have good luck with that, you know. It's like, I've been in this industry a long time, and nobody's managed to line up all those guys yet, you know, for one series. And then, like, 6 months later, me with my boot in my mouth, you know, staring at all six covers from like these guys. You know, I can't believe it was like... He literally got every single guy he said he was going to get.
Well, yeah. I interviewed him last year when he was shooting The Mutant Chronicles, and he's such a down-to-earth guy, and I can appreciate that he is one of those guys that can sell, you know, ice water to Eskimos and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I know. I'm really tempted. I'm going to be like, hey, you want to see if Ditko wants to do anything? You know, I swear he could get Ditko to work again.
That's the test, exactly. There's the mountain, man.
I know. I was like, see if you can get in. We'll get some new horror comics going with Ditko, and then my life will actually be complete.
There is one other project, because Tom mentioned it last year when I talked to him,
mm-hmm.
Under Raw. And it seemed like that was even going to take a front seat before Cal would get going as a movie. And I can't remember the name of it now. Is it The Lurkers?
The Lurkers, yeah. You know what wound up happening with that, really, was, two things. My life sort of exploded about a year ago.
Okay.
With some stuff while I was supposed to be writing this thing, and that sort of slowed things down. But also, there were all these shifts and, you know, personnel at Lionsgate and getting the deal settled, and then I wrote the script and I read it. We all sat there and we're like, I wrote pretty much exactly what's in the comic. And then we all sat there and I literally. It's my own fault. I got all these new ideas, and I submitted those to Lionsgate, and everybody was like, yeah, this is much better. So right now, I'm starting from scratch.
Okay.
I'm going to rewrite the script, because, you know, this is going to be maybe my one shot to actually have what I write get filmed, you know?
Sure.
Because, you know, there's a really good chance, you know, since we're producing and all
right.
that, I'm going to hand this script to a director, and we're going to stand there and actually get this thing made. And Tom will have to say what I wrote, and it's going to be really hilarious. But, so, I want to do it right. So, I went into Lionsgate a couple weeks ago, you know, with these notes, and said, like, what do you think of these changes? Does this make it? And across the board, everybody just said, okay, you know, because we're trying to do a noir horror movie, you know?
Right.
And, I mean, I want the movie to be like that poster Tim did, you know?
Yeah.
And, I think I cracked it, but I also walked myself into having to write a script twice. So I've just started working on that, and we should, you know, I should have a script hopefully in a few weeks.
So Raw, is it the three of you, or is it you and Tom, or how is it?
Me and Tom are, you know, the main guys, and Tim is part of it as well. I mean, Tim is invaluable, you know?
Yeah.
You know, he's just, I mean, he is just, I mean, and not just in comics. I mean, Tim seems to know everybody. And he's just, you know, like I said, just one of my oldest friends, and I love having him part of the company.
Well, that's great, man. I think the slate of projects are great, and I, you know, look forward to them when they come through as films, and then also when they come through as comics as well.
There's an awful lot of people doing comics just to try to sell a movie right now, and that was sort of never my intention. Me and Tom and Tim love comics, you know, and we want to make sure that the comics are, as you know, are a satisfying comic experience, and then if that works, then we'll worry about hopefully doing as good a job in a movie, you know, but not just doing one for the sake of the other or vice versa.
It's nice that Hollywood has taken notice of your stories, and now it's starting to finally happen.
I feel so fortunate and so lucky. I'm enjoying the hell out of my life right now.
You just got back from the New York convention, and in conjunction with MySpace, this secret guest, how did that all work out?
Oh, that was really funny, because I've just known, you know, I'm doing a lot of work with Fox, and Fox, you know, works with MySpace, and MySpace has been really great to me as far as, like, at one point I was on there, and I literally was just like, all right, I've had it, you know, I'm getting, like, people just write insults out of the blue. I was like, okay, you know, I don't need this aggravation. And they called me and were like, would you come back? And I was like, well, I'm not building that whole page again. And this guy, Sam Humphries, who I love over there, basically just called me and go, yeah, we still have it. And they just, my whole thing was revived without me having to rebuild it.
Okay.
Like 6,000 friends or something like that. Like, just, I was not going to go through it again.
Hey, you're one of War Balloon's MySpace friends, absolutely.
Yeah, so, yeah, I had got all these calls because all of a sudden, evidently, my avatar just disappeared from everybody's, you know, thing. Everybody was, you know, what happened? Lost, you know, left the community. So I got on, you know, I got back on there, and so just before the New York Con, Sam called me and goes, you want to be the third mystery guest? I'm like, sure, who are the first two? And he's like, Garth Ennis and Jim Lee. I'm like, are you what? You just want me to get, like, pelted with tomatoes and, you know, lettuce? Or, like, there'll be just crickets when I'm announced? I'm like, come on, that's too weird. But, you know, I said, yeah, I'll do it, and you know what? The crowd was so responsive. Because they introduced me last. It was really like, you know, Jim Lee, explosion, you know, Garth Ennis, explosion, and then me, and you could sort of tell, like, everybody went like, okay, yeah, great. You know, and then the panel itself was just so much fun, you know, because both guys, you know, Jim's hilarious,
yep.
And, you know, and Garth is hilarious as well, and it was kind of cool because I kind of felt like I was the one representing independent comics, you know?
Yes.
You know, I mean, even though I know, you know, Garth especially, you know, he does a lot of other, he doesn't just do mainstream stuff.
Sure.
But, you know, there was a nice balance up there, and the audience was, you know, knew all the projects, and it was really fun. It was really fun. It was the most nervous I've ever been doing a panel, though.
What do you think of all this new media? And I'll throw podcasts in there as well, because Beyond Word Balloon, I know you've been a guest on many, and you participate in several as well, the MySpace world and everything. I mean, you know, I know it's a dual-edged sword, and I know you've experienced both edges. But
yeah.
Is it helping? Do you think it's helping the cause in on balance?
See, I don't, you know, I'm not really sure. I'm sort of a shameless self-promoter, because that's sort of,
You have to.
You know, I come from, like, you know, I mean, where I get my start sort of commercially, if you call it that, is, you know, I was in a band. And in the band, you know, you set up your own shows, and then you make your own flyers, and you go all around town, and you tape them on the post, you know, posts, and then the police tear them down, and you run back to put more up, and you go to all the record stores and you put flyers there. And it's this whole, you know, nobody's going to come to your show. If, you know, it's like, basically, if you don't care, why should anybody else? And I really do. I really live by that model. I'm very accessible and very open. And, you know, it was, like you said, like, you know, with all that stuff that happened last year, you know, with people. Basically, if people who don't know, just, you know, I just, basically my personal life got, you know, splattered all over the internet last year. And unpleasant, but at the same time, you know, hey, it happened, and it's okay. Me and Rick Remender, who does Fear Agent, this is the conversation we're having right now. We're like, okay, if we shut down our website, got off MySpace, and just wrote all day, you're telling us nobody's going to buy the books? You know? We're like, do we have to be this? You know, it's, we're having this ongoing thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I like the contact, you know? I'm just waiting. It's, you know, I'm waiting to see, does it really pay off, you know? So, I don't know. I love the podcast and the stuff like, you know, this. I just love it because, you know, I'm meeting a lot of new people and get to talk about what I love to do. And, you know, it's really the whole nervousness factor is eliminated, you know, because I do stuff on G4 every once in a while, you know, and or the tech of the show. And
yes.
I'm like, you know, that's that whole, you know, it's like that thing where they're like, and action.
Yeah,
and
you got 3 minutes.
I don't remember
go.
The next 3 minutes, you know.
I do know. I work at TV and radio. I do know what you mean.
Yeah, it's horrifying. You know, so, you know, it's a really tough question. I think, yeah, it seems to help because God knows everybody's flocking to get a page up on MySpace.
Mm-hmm.
But my sales, my numbers haven't changed.
Okay.
You know, they fluctuate as much as they ever have. There's no way to gauge it. It's a very tough question to answer.
And, you know, it's funny, we don't need to go where you went, because I that wasn't even my intent as far as covering what happened to you last year, because that was ridiculous.
You know,
and, you know, that was your own business. I mean, that's...
Yeah, but you know what? That's the thing, too, is people can understand about me. I don't have a hard time talking about this stuff, you know?
All right.
And honestly, I've just been waiting for somebody to ask. It happened. I can't deny it. I didn't pursue, you know, getting my side of the story out there because I didn't want to contribute to what I saw as being just somebody trying to get attention based on my name. You know, so when it was going on, I was like, radio silence. You know, I was just going to ride it out, to put on my helmet and ride it out. And, you know, I think that was a smart decision. But now, you know, I'll talk about that like, you know, anything else in my life. I'm sure my agent and people like that are just like, shut up. But, you know, I got nothing to hide.
Really what my interest was as far as asking you, more in terms of just the new avenues of publicity, and also, you know, tying into what you were doing with the Cryptics, finding different ways of getting the word out or exploiting a creative idea as opposed to the traditional comic book, novel, film, whatever.
Well, I think anything can help because, you know what, the unfortunate thing about the comic industry is we're still shrinking, you know, and we're every day we lose, you know, our readers, you know. I mean, comics used to sell in the millions. When I was at Eclipse, I almost had books canceled because they only sold 30, 40,000. You know, now that's a smash through the roof hit. So any new avenue that can possibly, like, the Cryptics might be, you know, only people who go to Hot Topic will love them. So how do we reach those people? You know, and how do we reach, and that's so much what comics are about right now, is trying to find new homes and new readers. You know, and so it's like, yeah, any new method is welcome, you know, because people might not know this material. If on an average people have 20,000 to 10,000 to 5,000 people reading comics, if hit comics are 50,000, there's a lot of people out there that don't know comics, and we need to figure out a way to reach them, and I think all of these ways, you know, every avenue we have to explore it if you love the medium as much as I do.
A good conversation with horror writer Steve Niles. Don't forget to look for 28 Weeks Later, coming from Fox Atomic Comics, The Cryptics, Cal McDonald's Criminal Macabre miniseries, and City of Others from Dark Horse, plus the I Am Legend adaptation, The 30 Days of Night books, and many other horror releases from IDW. This episode of Word Balloon is sponsored by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades offers a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at up to 35% off with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. Plus, check out Steve Niles' 30 Days of Night books from IDW. And don't forget to visit InStock Trades' sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, at dcbservice.com for all your pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off, and monthly specials are 45% to 75% off every month. March pre-orders include the first issue of DC's new Countdown weekly series for 75% off. Only 74 cents for Countdown number 51. Visit InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com. Thanks a lot for listening. Don't forget, if you ever have any questions or comments about Word Balloon, I can be reached by email, john@wordballoon.com, and look for us not only at Newsarama and at iTunes, but also at all the various podcatcher websites, our MySpace page at myspace.com/wordballoon, our ComicSpace page at comicspace.com/wordballoon, and if you'd be so inclined to leave us a review at iTunes or at any of the podcatcher places, we certainly would appreciate your input and your approval of Word Balloon. Until next time, thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2007.